Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm another host, Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today's topic is about teaching and learning new games. But first, let's go off topic for some news, announcements, and feedback.
All right, so we don't have a lot of news or announcements or feedback.
I wonder that why that could be.
Big behind the curtain reveal.
Oh no, you shouldn't tell them.
I'm going to do it.
God, you're crazy.
We just got done recording episode 4.
I did.
So normally we do not do back-to-back episodes. It's a very common thing to do in podcasting. You record 2 at a time, so you only have to do it twice a month. We like to record every weekend. Gives people a little bit more time to give us feedback. But this time we're doing back-to-back because I'm going on a cruise in a couple days. So
nice.
Yeah.
Where are you guys going?
We're going to the Western Bahamas. So Florida Keys. We're going snubaing in the Keys.
What the hell is snubaing?
Yeah. Yeah. So apparently it's some, I don't know, cord and go underwater and stuff.
Oh.
Sydney doesn't know.
I'll look it up. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I'm like, I'm just going to book some snorkel excursions. You're okay in water, right? She's like, I think so. I'm like, okay, we'll be fine. In Mexico, we're doing some kind of like cave swimming or snorkeling or something. So that should be fun. But yeah, we're doing some research for our wedding that we plan to do on a cruise ship next year. She bravely has agreed to that, except she's never been on a cruise.
Right.
So this is our trial run.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our hope is once we get back, we'll actually have dates because I want to actually talk to the cruise people. What are the wedding options? You know, set everything up. Either get some dates. And yeah, that's our goal. But it's very, very difficult to record a podcast from a cruise ship when 2/3 of the podcast aren't on that same cruise ship.
Yes.
And the internet on the ocean is not that good.
I could fit in a suitcase.
I would almost do that, except I've been told specifically. She's like, oh, you should record from the ship. And then she's like, wait, no, you cannot invite Josh on our cruise.
So that's a fair point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all right, fine. We won't bring anyone along. However, for the wedding, we'll all be on there.
That's
and
true.
We're going to record a podcast.
Oh, nice.
On the week of the wedding.
I like it. You're hardcore.
So, yeah. Because we also plan on having some kind of games at our reception.
Yep.
So whatever that game happens to be, it'll be a special edition episode.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our second episode. I think we had a little bit of a conversation between the last one and this one, and we liked what we liked the new format, so we're not going to change it.
Kitty, how was it, you know, first time?
Yeah, it's weird.
It is a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun, though.
Oh, definitely.
Keep on.
It's just hearing your own voice and like, oof.
Oh, she hasn't listened to herself.
No,
on the podcast.
I see. Oh, you wait. Yeah.
That's the part of back to back that's a little bit scary. Yeah.
The tricky thing though is once you start listening to it and you're like, oh, I really like this, and you just keep listening to your own voice, and it's like, wait, I should probably not like it as much as I do.
Big head.
I have a hard enough time with mirrors and bars, so this is just one more.
You're gonna be driving along, and you're like, why am I talking? Where am I at? What? Huh? It's like the voices are outside my head right now. This is weird. Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. You know, we're just kind of learning as we go.
Definitely.
For those people who have actually listened to all the episodes, I know there's a handful out there that aren't sitting at this table right now.
Whoa.
Thank you for listening.
Oh my God, thanks so much.
Very much appreciated. We're going to keep doing it regardless of whether or not you listen.
Yep.
Yeah, you can't stop us.
No, I'm doing it for the press passes to conventions. So I just need to get a
lot. I'm glad you're upfront about that.
Yeah, I just want people to know my expectations are very much not that high. also, neither are the needs to get a press pass. You just have a podcast and like, oh, here you go. Like, all right.
Sweet.
Great. That does mean that maybe in the future that we'll interview people.
Oh, that will be fun.
I need to figure out how to use Skype so I can plug it all together. I'm running out of ports in our mixer, so we'll have to, I'll fix that.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to buy more things. It's your favorite part of this.
There is an adapter. I can get at least 2 more inputs in on this mixer, I had to make it happen. I think that's all for our off-topic stuff. So let's press this button here.
In this episode, we're talking about teaching and learning new games. What do we try to do to teach a new game to players? How do we change our techniques for new gamers versus more experienced gamers? And what do we like being taught? What do we like when being taught a game? Lovely. So, one of my best performances, yes. I would say. Yes.
So we'll something to improve on in the next episode. Sure. Josh to read the copy before he reads the copy.
Fine. Whatever. These are still early days.
Yeah, this is all part of
people the like it more when it's rough around the edges anyway. Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. It's what makes it live.
Right.
You know, it's organic.
Yeah, we're one take people.
Yeah. We're also still off topic. So back to being on topic.
Learning games.
Yes, learning games. We have spent, this is 5 weeks now. Actually, Josh and I were playing games for several weeks before even doing the first podcast, knowing that what we wanted to do or trying to get ahead of the curve there. So we've learned a lot of new games over the past couple months in a faster pace than I think any of us normally would. That usually means that I am learning the game and then teaching the game. And then we play the game. And then we play it again and again and again. And I have a number of different techniques I use to learn a game. One of my favorite ways of doing that is to actually watch YouTube videos of it. It is oftentimes excruciating to watch people teach you a game on YouTube videos, though.
Yeah.
So there is one, Watch It Played, with Randy Smith, I think. Last name is Smith for sure. Anyway, really, really good. Right. I've Indiegogo'd his next season. Does a lot of really good stuff. He also does Watch It Played, so you can see him teach the rules. This is essentially reading the rule book and showing you in real time. He doesn't read the rule book, but goes in that same order. And then he'll show a session of being playing the game. Usually it's like split up into four pieces. But it's a really, really good way to learn how to play a game. If you're not sitting there, there's some other techniques that I use as well. But what I really want to do is kind of give a back and forth. So if I'm teaching the game all the time, that means you guys are listening to me teach you the games all the time. What can I do better to teach games better? And what would you do if you were teaching a game?
Well, before we dive straight into that, I have a quick retort to something you just said a second ago about the whole watching the YouTube videos to learn the game. You said it was one of your favorite things, and then you immediately said it was excruciating. You need to explain this paradox.
All right. So, Watch It Played, love watching that. He does a really good job at showing it. Random people teaching a game on YouTube.
Right.
Where I think I was looking, I can't remember the exact game I was looking for. It might have been this is a lot of ums and ahs, which apparently are bad.
He's stuck. He can't remember.
Sydney, this segment's for you.
Yeah. There was a game that wasn't on Watch It Played yet. So I just randomly picked someone else's.
You know, and it was teeth pulling.
And as I'm watching this, I'm just like, oh my God, why is this 45 minutes long? Why? And he really did not get through the entire game until 45 minutes into it. This game involves a few cards, and that's about it. Right. There's 8 paces on the board. You put cards and you cover them up, and then you go around and you're trying to find the bad guys.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, in theory, visually watching it is great only when it's done right.
Yes. So only when, yes.
Okay.
So there's a certain pacing to it that is necessary. And like I say, Watch It Play, it does a really good job. Also, the video reviews from Dice Tower do a pretty good job at giving you an overview of the game.
Right.
So they do not teach you how to play the game.
Right.
But I strongly recommend watching a review video before you read the rule book. Because at least then you have some context.
Before.
Yes. So if you're ever this is one of those things that I've always had an issue with teaching, is we teach people things with no context.
Yep.
So here's this rule book. Read it through. You don't really have anything to relate it to.
All the jargon and terms are new. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah. They may be referring to something that you're not going to get to later. But if you have an overview of the game, even if it's just a review, it's like, oh, I get what this game is about. So as I read the rule book, I can associate back to that game. I think that really helps to learn the game. So when I'm learning a game, I'm watching a video if it's available, reading the rule book or watching a review if that's available, reading the rule book. And then the next thing I'm probably going to do is set up the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if nobody's going to play it, I'm going to set it up so I can get through all of those pieces. And that's when you guys come in and you sit down and you're like, okay, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the first thing you want to know when someone's teaching you a game?
How to win.
Yes.
Okay. What's the point?
Which is, and what if I was to say, okay, to win this game, you need to get as many victory points as you can.
And that's what I'm looking for. When I start with how do I win, it's kind of like, where is this going? And then as I hear the rules, I see how that leads into that winning objective. There's an objective to almost every game, that there's the win condition.
Right.
Then, you know, so when you're hearing the rules, I like to have that in the back of my mind that, you know, oh, that makes sense because I'm trying to get to this point.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I think even to add to that, so you'd want to know initially how to win in the terms of the rules. So that, you know, you win by accruing this many victory points or, you know, more than anyone else or by beating this thing or that thing. But then you know, I want to hear the explanation of the mechanics of the game and how it works, turn by turn, all the rest of it, the rules. Then I want to instantly know the deeper question of how to win, which is tell me really how to win. Not the person with the most victory points wins. Tell me if you're the teacher of the game and you already know some strategy, bring me up to your level so that I can compete with you. It goes back to what we were talking about last podcast, being competitive. I want to be given that opportunity to be competitive straight away.
So you want strategy taught along with the rule?
Just a couple of quick things, especially if this person is pretty new to games or this type of game. You know, I think most of the time you're going to want to do it because it's, you know, it's a lot of people who play games are competitive, like me and Kitty clearly are. Mm-hmm. And for some weird reason, you're apparently not. Maybe I still think it might all be a ruse. I think bringing everyone up to a certain base level, like you don't have to teach all of the strategy that's out there possibly, but maybe some quick obvious pointers that you really should know, but might not know just from hearing the rules quickly. That would really help.
All right.
I feel the exact opposite. I expect the first time I play a game, I'm probably going to lose. I don't want to hear the strategy. I just kind of play the first few games to watch what people are doing to kind of feel my way through it.
Right.
What is it? In Maverick, where he promises to lose for the first hour playing poker.
Yes.
And then he learns everyone's tells. That's my strategy for learning games, is that I don't have too many expectations the first time I play a game and then build up towards the strategy. Yep. I'm more watching what other people are doing.
That's really interesting because I suppose for me, what's going through my head is I agree with you. I want to learn as well. I don't want to be given every single bit of tactics, but I almost see it as a bit of wasted time. It's like, I want to compete with you, and that's the enjoyment I get out of this game. And if I have to spend two or three games getting to a level where I can compete with you, like, what's the difference with that versus you just telling me some strategy I'm going to figure out in half an hour's time?
Mm-hmm.
That, I suppose that's my way of thinking about it. It's just, I kind of, because I love that
learning styles. Yeah. I guess
I'm actually more in the kiddie boat in that. Right. Like, my first game, I do not want to win at all. The only thing I'm doing for that first game is learning how to play it. So that's all I'm trying to do on the first one, is just learning the mechanics, learning how to play it, because there's just too much to think about where if I'm trying to win, I don't know if I'm following the wrong strategy or what happens to be going on. So I personally look at that first game as a learning experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If I play a second game of that game, now I'm actually playing the game.
Yeah.
So it's tricky because some people, that very first playthrough, Josh apparently, this is it. Game on.
It might be a game that I never play again, right? And so And not because I don't like it. It might just be that, I don't know, you know, like you.
Don't you've have got, the opportunity.
Right. And, you, and you've got so many games in your collection that if I'm playing with you, we're probably playing a new game every time. And so if my enjoyment is being able to compete with you and I know I'm going to be severely disadvantaged if you don't give me some more information about how to be good at the game, then I'm like, just give it to me now because it's going to increase my enjoyment of that game. It might be an odd request, and I think people should like message in and weigh in on this particular point, because I don't know if there's anyone else that's like that. I think it is kind of a bit of an odd thing.
I assure you, I have played with many people like that.
Okay, good.
And people that are cross between you and I. So they pick up the game, they know the rules, they're likely going to win. Also, that is the most important thing to them. And this particular person I'm thinking of will take twice as long as you take to make a decision.
Wow.
In a first game.
Wow.
Where nobody really knows how to play it.
Right.
This person is analyzing every angle.
Yeah.
Because they literally have a running tally of the number of games they've won the first time they played them. Like, wow. That's what they're tracking.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So you're saying this person is even more hyper-competitive than I am, maybe.
Yes.
And that's what's driving that. But see, this is where I think it could be really useful for you to do this little bit of giving people a leg up on the strategy, is that I think that would help them make decisions quicker. If they're trying to get their head around, oh, wait, what pieces do what? And wait, I can play this card on what turn? And all the intricacies of just playing the game, and they're trying to strategize, that's what's taking them so long. And if you gave them a little boost, maybe that would speed them up. I don't know.
So the question is, when do you introduce the strategy versus the rules?
Mm.
Are you introducing the strategy as you're giving the rules? Or do you say, this is how you play the whole game, and here are some strategy pointers? So, right. So if you give it while you're teaching the rules, it complicates things a little bit, right? So if you teach after the fact, or maybe even during gameplay, is that okay? Or do you want to know everything ahead of time?
I would prefer to know ahead of time. I think it just... For me, I'm assuming, because I don't think I've ever had this bit of strategy thrown in there, some simple strategy. I would have it just before you start playing, after the rules have been told. Just before you start, I would throw in. I think that would work really well.
All right. What about you, Kitty? Do you want strategy during the game or not at all? You want to figure it out yourself?
I am very much... Too much explanation of the rules is just going to weigh me down. I feel my way through games much more than I
agree with that.
Understand from the rule explaining. Something that my mom always did when she was teaching us games, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, I'm a second generation nerd. My parents are both big nerds.
Excellent.
So
that's why we like
I played a lot of games with my mom growing up, and we would play an open face hand of a card game or a cards on the table version of the board game first. And she would explain what she was doing. And that's always been my favorite way to learn a game, is just by watching someone go through it and kind of explain. And that kind of is the YouTube video.
Right.
What a good one is just somebody taking their turn and telling you what they're doing.
Yep.
Yeah,
I do like the open hand method. I also like when you play a few turns, say, okay, we're going to play two turns of this game, and then we're going to stop,
scrap it, and start reset over
the game. And in doing that, that allows us to really get the mechanics in, but not get so involved where, oh, now I've thrown
it
away
everything.
It feels
like a wasted three-hour game or whatever.
Yep. Now, when I do that, though, oftentimes, I'll say probably more than half the time, people are like, no, we can just keep going.
Just keep going, yeah.
Yeah. So it can become a little tricky. It's like, no, we're going to restart. No, we're good. We got it.
How do you feel about people making characters for just one session of
exactly.
Games?
Yeah. Well, and I think that kind of points out an interesting thing with people, though, is people will learn as you play the game. Mm-hmm. If you play a turn, they're going to learn the game.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to get immediately invested in it. They didn't need all the rules up front.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now you're playing this game. And like, no, we don't need to stop. This is good. What do you think about the reset, though? Like, if you're doing open hand, or you're doing, just let's do two turns or something, and run reset. When you were playing your open hands, did you just pick up the hands and continue the game as normal? Or did you reset every time?
You know, I don't really remember. I would say it was more we'd play like one round of the game or a certain amount of time and then move towards closed hand version of the game. So you wouldn't play the whole thing open face.
Right.
I mean, it depends. Depends what kind of game it is as well. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. we're talking about this specific game. You know, it makes more sense to just restart the whole thing, in my mind anyway, to have new cards all over again when you're doing closed hand. With some games, it might not matter that people know what, you know, starting positions you had or starting pieces you had or whatever it was. I love the idea of playing through to learn it. Like, even though I was saying about having big heads up about strategy and things, I think the best way to learn, you're right, people go to sleep when you're explaining things. People switch off because they're hearing all this jargon that they've never heard before. They're only really invested when their pieces are on the board, they're moving or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's really when I start to pay attention. And I definitely feel myself zoning out through explanation sometimes, not on purpose. And then I think, oh, goodness, that's so rude. I've just like not heard like 2 minutes of explanation. Chris is going to have to tell me again later. He's going to hate me.
Yeah. If I could get people to watch a video review of a game before we started playing it every time, I absolutely would. And I may make you guys do that.
Yeah.
Just because it gives you a little bit more context of the games and we kind of know what we're going to what we're going to do. So, hey, we're going to play this game and this game on Monday night. Hey, we're going to play this game on Thursday. So that gives you a chance to go out there, look at the game, go to Board Game Geek.
Yeah.
And then I can teach the game, but I'm teaching it at a way, I'm teaching it to almost experienced players at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
it's just the polish on there. But when you're doing it with a casual group, it's like, okay, everyone, let's sit down and watch this video. It's only 25 minutes long. And then I'll talk to you for 25 minutes about how to play the game you just watched.
Right.
That doesn't work out.
No one wants homework for their recreation.
No.
Yeah.
So, except you guys have to, because now it's a pseudo job. just say it. But yeah, so we talked about win conditions. What's the goal of the game? Is it possible that... So that should be introduced at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Here's how you win, because you want to know what your end goal is. But at a certain point through the game, should the experienced person say, okay, let's stop and let's talk again about how you win the game on your first playthrough? So the reason I ask that is some games have complicated win conditions. If it's, you know, the first person to do this, that's an easy win condition and everyone can wrap their head around it. But if it's more of like a point salad type of thing, you may not know what's important. Is my gold worth points? Is the wood worth point? What's going on there? When is it okay to say, okay, everyone, just stop for a second. Let's make sure we all know how we're going to win this game.
Well, that's interesting. Like, when to do that? I mean, it's a tough one, and I think it will depend on the game. What do you think?
I don't think you really need to stop most games.
Yeah.
It's more, you do this all the time, where especially... when we were playing Scythe, you would just, so this is what's going on here. And remember, like, look where everyone is on popularity. You just throw out these little comments, like, kind of drawing attention to, and remember, we're long-term strategies going on here. Yeah.
It can be a bit of both because, again, I personally would prefer it just before you start the game, so that I almost have that information already from turn one. I think I could, again, being a hyper-competitive person, I think if you told me something at turn three, I'd be like, right, so you've had three turns to like get ahead on that thing. You know, I know that you're not like that personally, but if someone did that, I might think, oh, great. Like, you know, why don't you just tell me that up front so I can actually think about it and pay attention to it.
Well, and sometimes as the teacher of games, so a simple game is actually not too bad because, you know, if it's a few pages in a rule book, everyone, you could just read it out loud and then everyone's at least heard it, even if you don't remember it. It's like, well, my fault, I didn't pay attention during that part.
Yeah.
But if it's a 50-page rule book, the teacher really can't and shouldn't give you every nuance of everything.
You're right.
You need to wait for the situation to come up before you introduce that new rule.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to retain it anyway.
Right.
There's this tricky balance, especially with complicated games, of how quickly you introduce these different rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of the reasons, you know, we mentioned Forbidden Stars last week, that when I'm teaching this game, this is going to be a 6-hour endeavor. Mm. A turn in that game can take 45 minutes for an entire, you know, everyone to take their turn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's some simultaneous play, so it's not like you're waiting for a long time, but people are moving and going simultaneous. Once you've done that first turn, you don't want to restart.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, because like, well, I've already spent 45 minutes. Let's just keep going.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's the point when you need to introduce the nuances and the and it's like, oh, well, I would have done this differently had I known that. It's like, well, right. You've taken one turn. Don't worry, you can recover.
One turn,
from
I think, is okay. But it is a tough one. You're right. I can see where you're coming from as the teacher now. It's not easy to just throw everything out there. And like you said, with context, it's important to throw these things out when it matters to people. So if, like you say, if you told them at the beginning, maybe they wouldn't even be listening.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find that with basically anything I teach, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I can't pre-teach, I can't, you know, pre-give you information.
Yeah.
The idea that you walk away with 20% of what you hear is a very common thing. Mm-hmm. Whatever you teach, they're only going to remember 20% of it. Well, that just doesn't work in games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I need you to retain 80 to 90% of it for you to feel like you know how to play this game well enough to be competitive, especially if you're Josh and went on your first playthrough.
I must win.
Right. Yeah. So you need to take different teaching techniques versus the shovel method.
Right.
But that's also complicated when you're trying to give you all the information up front that you need. So it's an interesting problem. And I think the real solution to there is if you're going to play a 6-hour game, take the time to watch the YouTube video.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So everyone can start from the same place. But for smaller, complicated games, shorter games that are complicated, I don't know, with my gaming group and, well, I have a bunch of people I play games with, but a lot of the time we're playing new games. Mm-hmm. It's always a new game. We're never going to play that game again.
Yeah.
It's cult of the new. And that's a term of, I just want to play new games. I don't want to play other games. Then you have the cult of the old, which is, but I love this game. I just want to play Power Grid every single time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's
that. Like an exciting game, Power Grid.
It is. It's not actually that bad.
Okay.
I'm sure it's
better than the title alone.
Yeah. I don't own it, but it's a, people love this game.
You don't own it?
I do not own it. I know.
Oh, man.
Wow. I know. I also don't own Ticket to Ride, but I don't like Ticket to Ride.
I own that one.
Yeah. You own it?
I do.
Yeah. It's the monopoly of today, I think.
I need to try this game.
It's when I say monopoly of today, it's like the family board game of today.
Right.
Okay.
It's if you're going to sit around.
I was
going to
say it's not overly complex, unwinnable nonsense.
Right.
So
right. It's the game that you would sit down with your family to play. Versus in the 80s, you were playing Monopoly or Sorry.
I really liked Katie's description of Monopoly.
Yes, it is a good description to be honest. It's like I say, there's a fine balance into how much information you can give up front to make that competitive player feel like they have a chance.
Yeah. I think what I'm getting at with this, my utopian idea of a quick summary of some good strategy tips is that even if you'd mentioned it as you were mentioning the rules, I think just before you play to be like, and here is my insider tip to actually how to win this game and have a quick few sentences. I don't think it would take that long, and I think it might prep people to fill in the blanks they might have missed.
Yep.
Amongst all the mechanics, you might have been throwing in some tips here and there, or the mechanics by themselves should be self-evident. Sometimes they're not, and I've completely missed. Oh, I wasn't concentrating on this one set of points that I should have been.
So you're speaking specifically of Tyrants of the Underdark, which we played recently, and the first game we played,
Scythe.
But with Tyrants, it's a deck-building game for people who haven't played it. There's some area control elements, but that's inconsequential to what we're talking about for this example. I was going for cards that allowed me to get cards out of my deck and to buy other cards.
Sure.
You were going for cards that did cool and interesting things.
Yeah.
So my beginning strategy was I need to clean out all the junk from my deck and I need to be able to buy cooler cards.
Yeah.
Yours was, I just want cool cards.
Yes.
And you found that my engine very quickly overpowered yours because I was able to do many more things later in the game.
Sure.
That is a good point where I should have said, hey, by the way, you really want to think of this at the beginning and then switch over to the cool cards.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I still am very new to deck builders. I think that was like the second deck building game I'd ever played in my life. And I suppose you've got to think about the relative experience of the player as well. Right. Someone who comes in, has played, you know, deck builders for years, you know, isn't going to need the same level of tips as someone like me would do. There is that to it as well.
Yeah. And that's a good point of like experience level.
Yeah.
You know, up until a month ago, you didn't even know the term deck builder.
No. No, I didn't.
You know, so you can't use that on someone. I mentioned the term yesterday to Kitty, and rightfully so, she was thinking Pokemon and Magic.
Right.
Which, yeah, technically speaking, you are building
you
decks
build a deck,
with those.
But it's not a deck
but
builder.
But it's not a deck building game.
Yeah. They're collectible. They're,
I wouldn't have known that.
Yeah. So
I didn't either.
Yeah. I mean,
Why do we have a show?
Don't worry.
It's great. It's a good balance.
We'll get you there. But no, there, and it's a subtle difference whether or not you're building it outside the game. So for Magic and Pokemon, those are the metagame. It's the game you play outside the game.
Mm-hmm.
When you're actually playing the game, you're just using that deck that you've already prepared.
Yeah.
In a deck building game, you are, while you're playing the game, changing the cards that are in your deck.
Right.
Whether it's growing them, swapping them, whatever the case is. So, but there are certain strategies to it and certain times where you have to pivot. It's like, okay, no longer buying cards. Buying cards are now bad.
Right.
I now want to make sure I'm just using my cards to generate the points I need at the end of the game. Those are difficult things to know when to teach, especially if you're a competitive teacher.
Yeah.
I don't want to give you all my secrets.
Right, sure.
So there's,
I think he's secretly more competitive than he lets on. He's like, oh, I could give them another leg up, but why would I want to do that?
Why would I do that? But there's other games like Settlers of Catan, or just Catan now.
Yes.
Where the beginning of the game, where you put your opening settlements, defines how you're going to do in that game.
Yeah. Right.
If you put them in bad spots, you're just, the whole game is going to be nothing for you because you're not going to be able to accomplish.
Right.
So the teacher has a responsibility to say, you probably want to go here and here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trust me, it'll make sense when you're playing the game.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of...
And I think it's more interesting like when you as a teacher bring the people up to your level. Like it's going to be more interesting to have a competitive game, I think, rather than knowing, I'm going to probably cream these people.
Yeah. Every single, I mean, it's, and I think it's win. Now, as someone who's learning the game, what is your responsibility in how much strategy? When do you ask questions? When do you clarify the rules?
I think the main one is just to actually listen, which is sometimes tough when things are complex, right?
It is. It is hard. I actually like to have Chris give me a summary, and then while we play, I'll often just keep leafing through the rule book.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So I try to kind of pick up on what other people are doing and also make sure that I'm taking my responsibility and trying to figure out those nuances on my own.
Right.
I think there's also an element of game design that can really help out with beginning players. Any game that comes with like a card that says on your turn, you do this.
Yeah.
That can be really helpful the first few times you play through. Or like the player card where you have so many options on your player card.
Here are the actions
in front of
you can take on your turn. Yeah.
And that can be really helpful. Kind of gives you a narrowed down instead of just staring at the board like, I could do anything.
Yeah, right. No, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at modern games, they're doing a much better job of that. You know, we keep referencing Scythe and Blood Rage because we've played a lot of those recently.
Yeah.
But when you look at the Blood Rage player card, the actions you can take are along the bottom of this of the card. Like, that's it. That's what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And you will know those actions, but you have that reference to go to. Scythe is the same way. There's some iconography to Scythe that you need to learn.
Yep.
But once you've learned the iconography, you can look down. You can see exactly what these things do. And then you're not so much looking up, you know, what the action is as much as what is the icon. Oh, I want to do this. This is the icon that does that. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm kind of learning that as we go. So when we look at modern game and modern game design, designers are doing a lot better job of making games, even if they're complex, that you can get into and learn.
They're learnable.
Yes.
And I think as well, we touched on this a while back, but it was like even terminology can be a big thing that you need to think about, because a lot of the time when you're learning new game, there's so much jargon that really just means victory points, but they call it something random, or it just means money and they call it something random. And so as a teacher, again, it's another good point to kind of almost translate these things, like, you know what this means, and make it kind of understandable for new people.
Yep. That is one of those things where people just want to come up with, you know, oh, this is a fuddly dunks. Yeah. Whoever has the most fuddly dunks at the end of the game wins.
Right.
How do I get a fuddly dunk? Oh, well, you just do this and then you get that cute.
With the thingamajiggers.
Yeah. With the thingamajiggers. It's like, oh, so you mean I use the money to buy victory points?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're fuddly dunks.
Right.
Yeah. So also, fuddly dunks is going to have to go somewhere for something.
I think so.
It's my new favorite word, I guess. So what do you, when you are, do you, all right, this is, do you ever, either of you ever have a desire to pick up a game and learn how to play it and then seek out somebody to play this game with you? And I ask because that's basically the story of my life, hence the reasons you guys are here. So when have you ever been in a situation where it's like, I really wanted to play this game, I'm going to learn this game and read the rules, and I just want to teach anyone that can learn it?
I have a lot of siblings, so I can bully them into doing pretty much any game with me.
That's nice.
Yeah. Now that we don't live in the same house, it's a little bit harder. But that was my experience for a long time, was we'd all get games for Christmas, and everyone would learn their rules of the game that they got, and then we'd all make each other play.
That's nice.
So that's my, most of my experience with teaching and learning games is either from my siblings or from Chris. Yeah.
So, and when you're teaching those games, you're teaching them kind of the same way your mother taught you.
Yeah.
You're doing open.
I think it's anything that you get excited about. I for me, it's mainly been games that I've played myself, but I know people that haven't played them. And I'm like, oh, this person, I know their personality. I know what kind of games they would like. I love this game. They would love this game. We have to play this game. And then it just comes down to, I mean, my experience with teaching stuff has really just been actually teaching, which I did for a few years. And it's about making them care. And I think, you know, we've touched on points like playing it, actually playing it to learn the rules a few rounds. Great idea. You know, so many times people zone out. And also just somehow making it more colorful, and just grabbing their attention as much as possible. But on the most part, that is actually playing through the game, whether it's, you know, we're just going to play a whole game and you're going to learn that way, or we're going to do a couple of rounds and then reset.
All right. So if you were looking at resources, so we mentioned like player cards and Kitty flipping through the rule book as you're playing. Do you think that should be something that everyone has, like have the rule book next to you? Because there are many games where you play and people are like, oh, let me check the rule book on that. Is that good or disruptive? Do you think everybody should be checking the rules as you're playing?
I mean, it's a tough one because really, it depends on the game. Like there are some games where that's going to cause that huge problem of waiting like 25, 30 minutes for someone to take a, because it can actually be longer if you're leafing through this thing the whole time. And if everyone's doing it, than if you're learning as you go. If it's a short game and the rules are fairly concise, or if you have one of those great player mats, I think it's better for everyone to have it. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm a multitasker. I cannot sit down and just do one thing. So I like leafing through the book, and I don't think it's disruptive to play because I am also keeping an eye on play. I try not to be the holdup because I've been, you know, studying the rules. I try to do it as the other turns are going on and make sure that I'm also aware of where I'm going. So I'm not just holding it up. If it becomes, all right, we all take a turn to read the rule book while we go around the table, that I think is just too long.
Yeah.
Too disruptive.
Definitely. I can see what you mean. I think if you have the, because that's what I would worry about, is not being able to pull off what you do, which is to be able to read through it and kind of keep an eye on the game. I would just be like, this is just going to increase my turn like 50%.
Right. So let's talk about after your first game. So you played the first game. And you've made mistakes, maybe strategically, or at the end, someone's looking in the rule book. And you're like, oh, we've been playing this thing wrong for 2/3 of the game.
Yeah.
Happens a lot.
What is your preference? So you find out you're playing a rule wrong for 2/3 of the game. Do you stop and say, oh, this game doesn't count, throw it out? Do you continue playing with the rule the way you were playing with it? Or do you correct the rule and change it in place?
I don't bother changing halfway through the game. If you're doing it wrong, people have been strategizing around that wrong way. You don't want to be like, especially feels unfair if the new correct rule benefits you and messes up everyone else's strategy. That just seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, I would agree with that like 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. Don't change it if you've been playing the way, unless it's been making the game less fun.
Yeah.
And changing that suddenly wouldn't make it advantageous for anyone in particular.
Mm-hmm.
If you meet all those conditions, then change it. But rarely that's the case, and I think you just carry on with it.
Such as playing Legendary Encounters and only drawing 5 cards and realizing it should be 6. Yeah. Hey, everyone, draw your 6th card.
Yes.
Yes.
Now we might actually have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Instead of getting crushed by this co-op game. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I was trying to get to before that question came to my mind is, at the end of a game, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're strategizing. For me, the very first thing I do, maybe not the very first thing, but definitely before I play the game again, is I reread the rule book front to back again.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know all of the different things. I've played the game. I can relate everything. And wherever the rules are different that we didn't play, I'm like, oh, we did this wrong. We did this wrong. We did this wrong.
Yeah.
And I think I do that in almost every single game. And almost every single time, there's 1 to 5 things. And I'm like, we didn't do these things just right. So the next time we play it, we'll change it that way.
Right.
So do you guys, if you're going to play a game, this is tricky because if you're, say you're at a casual game night, you go to a meetup or something where people are playing board games, you play Power Grid for the first time, you've played it, it's great, you enjoyed it, you leave, are you going and checking the rule book online? Are you downloading it to see how, if you played it right?
I thought about looking up strategy because I love winning. And I don't always do it. Sometimes I do. But yeah, if I really get into a competitive game, I'm definitely looking up strategy because I want to play that again. It was fun. And I want to be 10 times better next time, as better as I can be. So yeah, if I like the game enough, I will go and research strategy.
All right.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is if I enjoyed it, I will I really, who am I kidding? I'm going out and buying it. Yeah. I don't have to look up the rule book online. I'm going to have that game if it was something I enjoyed. If it was something I was like, I'm not going to bother. I'm probably not going to encounter it again. So,
So essentially, if you enjoy the game, you're going to go back over for strategy. You're going to go back over to make sure you're playing it right because you're looking forward to playing it again.
Yes.
And you want to be as prepared as possible for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to crush people.
What about terms? So a lot of times we'll teach games, and especially for someone who does a lot of games, even a term as simple as a meeple, which I think most everybody knows what a meeple is now. But
yeah, it took me a little while to get there, though.
Right. But because it is one of those words that is only used in the game industry, in the board game industry specifically.
Yeah.
How much jargon is okay when you're teaching something for like a new player? You are now dubbed game teachers. You're going to teach somebody, Josh, you're going to teach Gloria how to play a game.
Okay.
You know, Kitty, you're going to teach Spencer. And there's drastic differences between those two personalities.
I'm interested to hear why. Oh no.
And I want to level set. So Gloria is not a gamer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
At least she claims to not be. When she's actually playing, she can get competitive.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of games that she will really enjoy, even though she doesn't think she is.
Yeah.
But she definitely doesn't know the jargon.
Sure.
Spencer doesn't like rules. So, and he'll argue, he's like, well, no, I just don't like complex rules. I'm like, no, Spencer doesn't like rules.
Okay.
He's a card player.
Right.
He likes very simple, straightforward, much more on the complexity comes from the style of play rather than the pieces on the board.
Right.
So let's say we just played Harry Potter yesterday. Kitty and I did. If you were going to teach that game to Spencer, what would you start with? Like, how would you go about that to begin with?
Well, I think he's played deck builders before, so I think he would understand the basic strategy. Once again, with terminology, I don't think I know the terminology. We just kept calling them hearts and coins.
Yep.
Right.
And lightning bolts.
And lightning bolts.
Yeah, because right. that's what they look like.
Yeah.
So what would you tell him the object of that game is?
The object of the game, it's a co-op game where we defeat the villains on the board.
Yeah.
And that there's a countdown mechanism with the locations.
Yep.
And that you use your power, your lightning bolts, to defeat the villains, and you use your hearts to not die.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's money to buy new cards.
Money to buy new cards.
Yep. Yeah. Like money you, that aren't money. As generic as you can get so that anyone can understand. Yeah, we're attacking this thing with our attack power. We're surviving with our health.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you were going to teach Gloria Blood Rage,
right?
How would you go about that?
I would say...
Like, what? Where would you start?
God. I mean, I'd have to try and trick her into playing for a start. Right.
So the first part is hitting her with a club. So she's like, what? Where am I?
Yes. Yeah.
Because she's not into hardcore strategy games. So I would have to pretend that this wasn't that, even though it is. Then how would I teach her from then on? Yeah, I mean, I would... I just try and get her as interested in it as possible. And I think the only way to do that with her is to really just start playing. And I would just like be like, we have to have a playthrough round that we're going to reset.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that she's the type of person that's how she'll learn it. And she won't feel the pressure because we're all going to reset this round. And that way she'll learn it as she goes along. And I think for her, that really works.
So would you even give... So someone like Gloria, who really isn't into the strategy games...
Yeah.
And honestly, we don't play a lot with these kind of players because they avoid this. It's like, wait a minute, that board has too many colors on it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no letters.
Yeah.
You know, if it's Scrabble, she's all about it. But,
oh, yeah.
Blood Rage, no. Would you even bother with describing how you get points, or would you just say the person with the most points at the end wins? Do you bother with a strategy for somebody who's
I would say, you know, on most people are not like you, Chris, and everyone I hear who isn't special Chris has some level of competitiveness, and I think most people would fall into that category. And if they're not into the strategy and they're not going to try really hard on their own to figure out the strategy, then I think I want to give them that in a nutshell before we start playing. This is how to be good at the game. And here's where you're going to want to pay attention. It's just about keeping them interested in that. And I really think playing it through a round would help that.
So I have to disagree.
Okay.
Not about the people not being like me. That's true.
Sure.
but I think that if you put too much strategy into a new player, especially right. a casual player,
oh, yeah.
If you mention strategy at all, you're going to lose them because they're still trying to figure out the game. The game's already over their head. And then you start adding in strategy,
right.
which was a way
more layer of complexities. Yeah, this is making sense. So okay.
My mom calls it kibitzing, where you almost play over their shoulder for a while.
Yep.
Oh.
That can be a really
Your
good
mom
teach.
Has a word for this.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's not allowed in most of our games now. You get yelled at for kibitzing.
Right.
But yeah, it can be a really good helping strategy at first right. when somebody who knows what they're doing can stand over your shoulder, look at your cards and say, like, if you do this, this will happen. Like, give you that insight into their style of play. It's kind of like an open play hand, but more one-on-one.
Yeah. Well, you so actually,
it sounds like training wheels.
Yeah, but you also brought up a good point. If you do this, this will happen. If you're teaching strategy, I think the better way to do it is saying, if you do this, this happens, this happens, and maybe throw in a third one.
Yeah.
But basically presenting their choices and consequences from those choices,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to saying, the best move for you in this situation is to do this.
Oh, yeah.
Because then they're not really playing the game anymore.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
I agree. I would say it's more broad strategy type things that I want to give people. It's like, you can't not pay attention to these kind of points in this game, because if I've seen new people not pay attention to those, and you're going to lose if you don't.
Yep.
So that's the types of situations I'm talking about. It's where you see those rookie mistakes that people have played this game before. Just heads them up straight away. I've seen people lose this game when they're new because they didn't pay attention to this, this, and this.
All right. So actually, that leads to an interesting, because I believe you're kind of going into the Blood Rage, where the very first game you played, you didn't use any quests.
Right.
So that's a lot of points. Now, in that game, you don't necessarily have to go for those, but you do have to push hard on some other aspects.
Yeah.
That's one of those games where you need to focus on a few things and let other things kind of fall.
Yes.
In order to get the most points out of it. But one of the ways I used to teach that game is at the very beginning of the game, there's a drafting round. Right. And this kind of works, like Catan's sort of the same way. At the very beginning of the game, you have to make a decision that's going to affect the entire game.
And I always describe that drafting round you're talking about as going to a shop and buying cool things.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you haven't played the game yet, you don't know what's cool.
You're making very important decisions that are going to affect the rest of the game
right.
without any knowledge on how they're going to play right. out. It's
So
very frustrating sometimes.
In that game, when I teach it the very first time to any new player, I skip that drafting round.
Right.
What I do is I split up the cards into their three categories, shuffle those, and give an equal number of those to each player.
Mm.
And we've skipped that. You now have the cards in your hand. You have all the different types that are available. And you're going to play that first, essentially, age with those cards. The second age, now we'll draft. Because now you know what the cards are. You know the advantages of each type of card. But if I was to try to teach you that and drafting strategy on your first game...
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's possible. I really don't think. Yeah.
It makes no sense trying to describe how
it's
that
too
works.
Complex. There's too much to think about. Yeah, I agree. Definitely.
So I think a good way of teaching games is kind of taking out the complexities or introducing the complexities in stage things, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Certain games aren't always that way. Mini games, just here are all the rules. You don't need to worry about it. It's not super complicated.
Right.
But any game that has a heavy planning component at the beginning, you've got to play through some test rounds.
Yeah, especially games that have several win strategies. It's really hard to try to describe how to do those things. Like, there's so many different paths you can take. Seven Wonders, I think, is a big one like that, where there's a lot of different ways you can go about playing the game.
Yeah.
And trying to describe them all is going to take hours.
Yeah.
And for that particular game, you have to focus on something, but you can't ignore everything. So there's just a lot of strategy to be built up.
But see, even that's useful, right? Just that sentence you said there, right? Like, you should be focusing on something, but you shouldn't like scattergun your approach.
Right.
Maybe it's as simple as that. And it depends on the game. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think a lot of games you can have, here is the general strategy. You know, don't weigh yourself down with this. This is good for the start of the game. This is good for the middle of the game.
Yeah.
Just kind of an overall general rule of thumb, you know, type of strategy. But if you try to go into the in-depth strategy, here's how you do the Queen's Gambit in chess, and this is what you're like.
Yeah.
You just, wait a minute, how does the pawn move again? You know, you're really, that's the level they're at, and you're talking about how to beat Big Blue.
Right.
You know.
So something I wanted to bring up that's going to sound a little bit off tangent-y was, because I'll forget it otherwise, was your oh no when you went to Spencer. And I think you explained it briefly, but I think this will be entertaining. What was behind that oh no again? Teaching the game to your husband Spencer, right?
Yeah, so my husband Spencer is difficult.
Okay.
I love him dearly, but playing games with him... I don't think the same way he does.
Right.
So a lot of times he asks questions that I don't even, like, know.
Consider.
Yeah, I'm like, what? He also is not a big fan of, I think you were telling me specifically Harry Potter to teach him.
Oh, right.
He does not like cooperative games.
Right.
He does not like games where, he's actually the opposite of Chris. He doesn't like branded games.
Right.
He doesn't like... He's like, oh, Harry Potter again.
Right.
But mostly he just gets so fed up with hearing the rules before you even start to play. I think he might be better off just like, all right, we're starting the game. And I gave him in my theoretical rundown, it's just like, here's the basics. We're going to go forward and see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad idea.
Chris gives very technical descriptions, and Spencer just like melts in his chair, like, oh. Yeah.
Well, and one of the things that Spencer doesn't like, and it's a very fair criticism, is lots of little rules that you have to keep track of.
Yes.
Or rules that change.
I feel that way too.
So it's, some people really like that. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I can't keep track of everything, but the more I can keep track of, the better I'm going to be at this game.
Right.
For him, he just gets frustrated the more there is to keep track of. It's like, why can't I just play the game that's in front of me and not have to worry about that thing over there and that over there and this over here? And, you know,
I can sympathize with that.
Yeah. Well, his threshold for too many rules is on the lower end.
Yes.
But when he does find a game he likes, he really likes it.
He will play it over and over again.
Oh.
I would actually throw him in the cult of the old, like, gamer type. He likes, here's a game I like, why would I ever need to play any other game?
Right.
You know? So, and you can just do that. And I have a few games where I'm like, oh yeah, I'd play that game whenever.
Yeah.
I can't think of any off the top of my head right now. But I like that sense of discovery and discovering new rules. Right. He does not. So that's kind of an opposite. I actually am, every time I play a game with Kitty, it always surprises me how good a analytical player she is. Because, like, just casual. Just half the time she's knitting and playing. Mm. You'd think she's not even paying attention. Then all of a sudden she's like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, wait, how did you even know what I was doing?
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm a secret attention payer. Yeah. It's that multitasking thing.
Yeah.
Like it.
And she wants to win. She gets angry.
Oh, yeah. I'm the same.
I'm better than I used to be.
You're there. You get British angry, which is, excuse me, good
oh,
sir.
Oh, John.
Excellent work in beating my ass. And that's your angry.
You haven't seen me really angry.
I get Chicago angry.
Kitty's like, oh, you totally screwed me over in that last move. I would have totally had it. That's my Kitty impression.
I had a thing that I wanted to talk about that Chris is very good about when teaching games.
Right.
Do-overs.
Yes.
I did it a lot when we were playing Harry Potter yesterday. I would put a card down and go, oh, no, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
And want to change. And Chris is very generous, so he lets me do it.
I think
that's
really
important.
Not everyone
does, though.
Yeah. Right.
Some people are like, no, your card's down.
Right. And I think it goes back to some competitive thing, because if you're a competitive teacher, then you're going to be like, no, because that's going to give me an edge. Whereas that's really important, I think, as a teacher, to be generous, especially if people haven't played that many times or not at all.
Undos on your first game should be absolutely essential.
Yeah.
In your second game, I mean, you're playing for casual, let that happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you really don't enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Like, you're teaching someone that you want them to play again, and if you're like, nope, sorry, you did it, you can't take it back, they're not going to enjoy the game.
We've all had those moments where we put it down, and the moment you put it down,
it's on the table.
You're like, no, and it's going to so annoy the hell out of me that I didn't get to like take that back because I realized.
There are many, not a lot of them, but there are some games where it'll say right in the rule book that everything on your turn is undoable.
That's nice.
Just work out what you want to do. Just do it. And if it's what you want, great. If not, then you can undo it your entire turn.
Right.
You know, and these are things where there's no randomness in it. There's no reveal. Because once something is determined, you can't go back behind that. But otherwise, I like that idea. Mm. Now, it really hurts when you're playing with someone who's super analytical. It's like, but I still think it's a better thing than not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're running low on time. Anything else that you guys like when you're learning a new game, or advice to people who are trying to teach new players new games, Josh?
Make it as interesting as you can. Even if you're not the kind of person to be like all flowery and razzmatazz, you kind of need that when teaching a game. It's all about keeping their attention, and as colorful and as much as you can hook them in, the better. So if you're just reading off the rule book, you're going to lose them.
I would agree. I mean, it's a game. It should be fun.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And learning the rules to a game should be fun too. Like, don't make the rules boring, because you're setting a precedent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty?
The best thing that people can do for me to learn a game is to talk while they play. You're really good about this when we're playing, is during the first few rounds, I'm taking this action because of this. I'm going to play this because of this, and talk out the strategy.
Yep. I think that's really important for a new, for someone who's teaching new players. I almost always take the first turn as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it matters and you're like, okay, someone else can take the first turn. It's easy enough. But I usually take the first turn and I usually talk it through.
Yes.
So phase one is upkeep. Phase two is this. And talking it out, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I'm doing that. Now, most people, even then, they're more busy reading their cards or something else. But I will continue to do that. And I think it's a good habit to get into, especially when you're learning a game, to do that as well. Mm-hmm. Because then people can stop. It's like, oh, wait, no, that's not how that works.
Yeah.
You know, so, oh, I thought that's how it was. But you're speaking it all out loud and everyone's learning from you that way. Mm-hmm. So it's a good way to go too. So that is our episode for this week. Again, I think this try conversation is working out really well.
We are nailing it, guys.
We're top, like the best.
Top of the chart.
We're going to be listening to ourselves over and over again because this is so good.
Yeah, I'm putting it on just replay.
Yeah.
I'll loop it. So before we pass it off to Josh, I do want to say, if you're listening to this and you haven't gone out to iTunes and rated us, and I know that none of you have, do it, because all we need is about 10 reviews and then we could start showing up on iTunes New and Noteworthy.
Yes.
Which puts us on like a cool page. Yep. So 10 reviews. That's all
we're counting on you guys.
Yeah.
We're counting.
And we can't review ourselves. That would be unethical, although I may get a different account and try it that way. But honestly, and any feedback would be great as well. So for that, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So email us with your comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can also reach me on Twitter at @JoshIsBlonde, Chris at @GameMasterChris, and Kitty at @KittenL. Of course, you can always leave a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. As always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art, and she can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we talk about learning and teaching new games. That's wrong.
Until next week.
Keep playing games and having fun.
Later.